I've seen this movie before. That one ends in tears. I can tell you exactly what happened.
It's early days.
They don't get it, and they don't seem to care.
There are no winners in a trade war.
A government that is bitterly divided.
We've got to raise the standards of journalism a little bit here.
Hi, I'm Fran Kelly from RN Breakfast. Welcome to the party room.
And I'm Patricia Carvelis from RN Drive. Fran, it's International Women's Day.
I'm wearing the T-shirt to remind myself. It says, this is what a feminist looks like. Happy International Women's Day to you too, Patricia. Sometimes you've got to wear a badge.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with a badge. Well, also happy 25th anniversary to you, Fran. For anyone who doesn't know, my colleague here has been at the ABC for 25 years. How does it feel?
Oh, my God. It feels slightly dinosauric, to be honest, in this age of flexible work. But then again, breakfast years are like dog years, PK, so I've actually been here for 1,012 years, if you count it like that. whatever. One thing for sure is I think it probably feels a lot better than the 30 negative news poll anniversary that's creeping up on Malcolm Turnbull. Don't you reckon?
Oh, yeah. And let's face it, the Prime Minister can't catch a trick, can he? This time, it's actually not in his party, but another sparring partner, the US President Donald Trump, who's causing him issues around trade, and that's been the biggest story this week.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is potentially a huge issue, as the Reserve Bank Governor and others have warned. You know, this could, if we end up with a global trade war, we could end up with a global crash, a global recession, and, you know, Australia could get very burnt by that. So I think this really, who would have thought this? 2 weeks ago, they were the best buddies. Every second word from Malcolm Turnbull to Donald Trump was mateship, mateship, mateship. And then he comes up and sort of bites us on the bum with this. Let's have a listen to Donald Trump.
What's been allowed to go on for decades is disgraceful. It's disgraceful. And when it comes to a time when our country can't make aluminum and steel, and somebody said it before, and I will tell you, you almost don't have much of a country.
Now, that's an overstatement, obviously, but it's not like we didn't see this coming. Donald Trump promised this kind of action in his campaign. Last year, Malcolm Turnbull, Matthias Cormann and others were in Germany with the president and others, and they were getting promises, pledges, that if there was this kind of retaliatory action against, you know, China or something, that Australia would somehow be protected from it. Well, what worth a promise, hey, from this man?
Yeah, that's right. It looks increasingly likely that there are going to be exemptions on national security grounds. That's certainly what the White House is saying now. I'm sure there'll be, we're recording this on a Thursday morning, there'll be more developments on this. So Australia, or at least some of our key industries, may be exempted at the end of this process. But I don't think it really spares the bigger problem, which is that it will start something very big in terms of trade wars, get carved out.
Let's come back to trade, because we're going to talk more about that with our party room guest this week, Sarah Martin. She's the political editor from the West Australian, and obviously trade, steel, resources, all the kind of import-export stories are huge for the West. But the other big story this week is, we've already mentioned it, International Women's Day. We've had major speeches from Kelly O'Dwyer, the Minister for Women, and Tanya Plibersek, the Shadow Minister for Women. And Labor is very proud of its achievement. It's got a lot more women elected than the other side. Their target is 50% by 2025, and they're almost there. They're at 48%. The Liberals, on the other hand, failing miserably. They've gone backwards. They've got a miserly 21% of their parliamentary representatives are women. That's 18 out of 84. Kelly O'Dwyer wants to do something about that, and she made this promise at the National Press Club.
When women put their hand up, they need to be able to know that they've got the financial firepower behind them to run effective campaigns. And so we are talking about putting together a federal fighting fund for women, and I've committed to them that I'm happy to go around the country fundraising for my colleagues for that purpose.
So there you go, Kelly O'Dwyer making, I think, a pretty strong statement about the fact that she's not happy with the numbers of women on her side of politics. I interviewed her as well, and, you know, she doesn't hold back. She says, no, it's not good enough. It's obviously not good enough.
We've heard this before, though, from the Libs. I mean, there was that huge celebration back in 1996 when John Howard was elected, so many Liberal women elected with him. The issue was they were in very marginal seats.
Of course, because it was a landslide win, and, of course, in those marginal seats, they happened to win.
And so the next time around, when you're carrying a GST in your saddlebags, you're going to lose seats, and a lot of those women went out again. So the Liberals eschew the idea of quotas, but without them, they just don't seem to be getting very far, do they?
Yeah, that's right. The other thing Kelly O'Dwyer mentioned, which I found really compelling and interesting, was this division of labour between men and women. And she says at the heart of the problem is the fact that still men are working full-time. It is women asking to work part-time. And she thinks companies need to set targets and be more proactive in actively encouraging or making it possible for men to take on part-time work, which of course means that they take on greater caring responsibilities, which of course means women can lift more at work, or at least be lifted at work, if I can put it in a much better way, and climb up the greasy pole. Because the greasy pole can't be climbed up all the time if men are always taking those key roles and women consistently have to do two jobs.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
this
right.
is the thing. If you're always doing two jobs, that's a very tiring thing for the ladies of Australia, let me tell you. Someone's got to help.
It's a cultural change that has been slow to be made. Like, there's basically been no shift in the number of men in a workplace who are taking more flexible work, and we keep getting research after research that shows that men feel that they are looked down upon, that they are that there's some kind of disregard for them within the whole corporation if they put their hand up for flexible work. So I think there's bipartisanship on this. I think Tanya Plibersek too mentioned this, and she also in her speech to the press club was talking about if Labor was in government doing something to try and at least record and put up in lights the gender pay gap and do something about reporting, get corporations to report how they're going on closing that gender pay gap. Another really stubborn indicator. It's still at 15%. It was 19% 10 years ago. We're not getting very far on it.
No, we're certainly not. Let's just revisit this news poll issue, because I think this one really looms. Here is Tony Abbott. Just listen to this.
It was the Prime Minister who set this test, and I guess if he fails the test, it'll be the Prime Minister who will have to explain why the test was right for one and not right for the other.
Yep, he will have to, and he's busy explaining it for all he's worth at the moment, trying to get out ahead of this. He's been doing that for a couple of months now, Malcolm Turnbull. I don't know that it's helping him at all. This deadline is going to loom. The point is really whether there's any shift in the party room to give anyone any momentum to, you know, cause trouble for Malcolm Turnbull. Is there another leader in the wings? Because I think Tony Abbott himself, we've talked about this before, you know, is diminished, I think, from his behaviour of the last years.
But what happens at the 30 lost news polls, Mark?
A lot of very difficult questions to Malcolm Turnbull.
Like, that day and the days around it are going to be difficult interviews for him, because even if there's not, you know, another leader that goes, surprise, I'm going to roll you, it doesn't matter.
So it's
matter.
More lost momentum,
asked.
Isn't it? It's more the government talking about itself and not the government trying to get, you know, their message out. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. The more you do that, the worse the polls are going to stay for you.
Yeah, and all of his frontbench colleagues have been trying to reset or, you know, establish a new test, I've noticed. They're talking all about, okay, the test should be how many jobs have been created and look at how many jobs have been created under Malcolm Turnbull. So that's the real test. But Tony Abbott and others will remind everyone, you know, when Malcolm Turnbull took over, he mentioned the economy, to be fair to him, and he mentioned an economic narrative, but it was also that news poll.
Oh, for sure.
Just quickly, we also saw a state election over the last week, and that was in Tasmania. Will Hodgman, the Premier, was returned comfortably in Tasmania for the Liberal Party. Now, Labor had a very contentious policy not to renew pokie licences in pubs and clubs. And ever since that election win, there's been a big debate about big money, you know, pokies' donations and the influence they played in the political campaign. We can't quite quantify just how much of an impact they had, because there's this delayed disclosure, which I personally find highly problematic. I mean, we should know in real time, in my view, for transparency reasons,
and
where the
no
money's going.
And there's no reason why we can't. I mean, technology allows that. It's shameful. I think in Tasmania they don't have to declare for 18 months or something.
No, and Premier Hodgman says he wants to reform this now, so there is a move to change it. But either way, there has been a debate about that role of money in this campaign. People like Erica Betts, Tasmanian senator, say, you know, you can't buy the people. Well, I agree, people cannot be bought, but there's no doubt that people people can be influenced disproportionately by ads. I mean, that's a fact. That's why people spend money on ads. Like, why else would you do it?
Tasmania is a small market and it can be easily influenced by resourcing. I mean, we saw that at the federal election. GetUp had this sort of ground army in Tasmania working for months before the election. And if you look at the results, which was almost a wipeout for the Libs, obviously it was very effective. So we're seeing a similar thing in South Australia. Well, according to Nick Xenophon, anyway, his SA Best party have taken a dive in the polls. He told me this week he reckons it's because the Hotels Association, the pubs and the clubs are putting in, he reckons, $1 to $2 million worth of ads so far, trying to keep him out because he also has a policy to limit the number of pokies in pubs and clubs. I mean, the Hotel Association is not backing away from that. I mean, this week, the general manager of the South Australian branch of the Hotels Association said there will be no let up in the advertising blitz. What it's hard to quantify is the impact that has on a vote.
Hey, Fran, should we bring in our party guest?
Let's meet Sarah Martin from the West Australian.
Sarah Martin, political editor for the West Australian. Welcome to the party room.
I'm very happy to be here.
Sarah, it's great to have you here. This is your debut performance here. It's great to have you this week too, because obviously the major story this week is all about trade. It's all about Trump's plans to whack that 25% tariff on steel, 10% tariff on aluminium, what that means for Australia. And I imagine that in West Australia, obviously you're the political editor of the West Australian, I imagine in WA this is a massive issue because, you know, exports and imports of resources. That's what WA is all about.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've also got Simcoa in WA who would be directly affected. And I think it's particularly interesting given this is happening just after Malcolm Turnbull is fresh off the plane from DC when it was all about mateship. He was standing side by side with Donald Trump and things were looking pretty good. And obviously the US is calling on Australia to do more with it in the Indo-Pacific region. The friendship, you know, was hailed as being at a high peak. So to come back and then be whacked with this, I think everyone is fairly shocked by it all. And you're absolutely right that WA is watching this one very closely.
And the thing, Sarah, is after that visit, and you were there, you know, they were obviously the best meeting ever. We're so close. There was a lot of all of that kind of messaging that came out of that meeting. During this whole week where there's been a discussion about exemptions, you get the impression that we just can't get anyone on the phone or something. Like, what's going on? Aren't we meant to be close?
Yeah, well, that's right. Going back to even the G20 in Hamburg last year when this issue was discussed and there was an indication from pretty senior members of the administration that Australia would be exempted. Now we've seen with all the turmoil in the US, it doesn't sound like Trump was even listening to his closest economic advisor, who's obviously since stepped down. So I think it is a tricky one. It doesn't sound like we're going to get any, certainly no country exemption, and it's looking like there may be some negotiation on a company basis. So is there going to be some sort of differentiation on Donald Trump's part between those countries that he wants to keep close and particularly in our region and those that he claims that need to be targeted?
Yeah, well, he's now talking about doing it in a loving, loving way, and we've got Sarah Huckabee Sanders talking about some kind of carve-out. So are we getting any private messaging about what that might mean for us in terms of direct tariffs?
Look, I don't think we're at that point yet. I think this is obviously every senior government minister who has a line to the US, to their ministerial counterpart, is working those relationships as hard as they can to try and get some exemptions. We know that there have been some problems trying to get Mike Pence on the phone. Now, Julie Bishop and Mike Pence have met several times since Donald Trump was elected, and he's sort of been seen as the conduit to the president. The fact that we haven't been able to get a direct line to him, I think, is obviously concerning government people here. But you've got to remember, like, Australia is only one of the countries that would be on the phone to the Secretary of State.
Yeah, can you imagine how many calls they've had?
This is what the beginning of a trade war looks like, and Australia's clearly not alone in being worried about it.
The Treasurer, Scott Morrison, said yesterday that basically Malcolm Turnbull had a good handle on the situation. So don't worry, everything's under control. Here he is.
I think Australians can see that the Prime Minister has a keen handle on what is occurring in the United States and is probably better placed than anyone, I think, to best read the situation. And I think that should give Australians a lot of comfort.
Malcolm Turnbull is now going to have to be using any leverage he has to try and get some exemptions for Australian companies. When Turnbull was in DC, there was a lot of discussion about Australia helping the US with freedom of navigation in the South China Sea and also potentially helping with the new tough sanctions on North Korea. So if the US wants this assistance from Australia, you'd think that we would be bargaining pretty hard, and perhaps that cooperation could be jeopardised if we don't get what we want on the tariff exemptions.
There's another story happening over in the West at the moment. It's linked to, you know, we don't want to be talking about Barnaby Joyce again in particular for the fifth week in a row. but within the National Party in WA, which is a very separate party, it's not really a part of the broader National Party. It's got its own feel to it, shall we say. You'll know that better than me. But they seem to be having this internal row about who leaked the complaint from the West Australian businesswoman Catherine Marriott, and was it leaked for political purposes? And they're really having a crack at each other, aren't they?
Yeah, they certainly are. And look, you're right. The WA branch of the Nats is fiercely independent. And indeed, even Barnaby Joyce described them as such when this issue came out. So look, you know, this comes down to the leadership of Mia Davies. Now, I don't think there's any question from the general public's point of view that Mia Davies has handled this as she should have. She wasn't the one who outed Catherine Marriott's name. She told her parliamentary colleagues that what had happened, that there was a complaint, and that was sort of the basis for her contacting the federal branch and informing them that Barnaby Joyce no longer had their support. Now, this has obviously stoked some tensions that were pre-existing. There's suggestions that this has been politically motivated to bring down Barnaby Joyce, and it's sort of got to the point now where they're questioning how involved Mia Davies was in making this complaint the trigger for Barnaby Joyce's resignation. The discussion now is really about her fate as leader, whether she is going to hang on.
But again, what it means is that this complaint from a woman about sexual harassment and sexual misconduct is being, to use that word again, weaponized again for another political purpose, which seems to be internal tensions within the WA Nats. I mean, yeah, really, this poor woman.
Look, going back to the complaint itself and the statement by Catherine Marriott, though, she makes some comments in that I think are really chilling about the implications and the consequences of her name being leaked and the way that this is being used and other women coming forward and speaking out about powerful men. And I thought that was, you know, beyond the sort of internal party political what's going on in the National Party, what she's saying is really... it's really potent at this point.
Absolutely. And she absolutely should expect that sort of fair and due process if you have a complaint. He's a powerful man. He was the Deputy Prime Minister when she made this complaint. Now, she was very cautious in how she made that complaint. And I think she's absolutely right that the way that this has been handled, if you were a woman who had a similar complaint and you didn't want to be, you know, outed, you would be thinking, you know, you'd be thinking twice about whether or not to go through this.
Well, there's another issue going on at the moment. It's in the seat of Batman. There's a by-election that's being held, and the by-election seems to be very much focused on a mine in Queensland. How many kilometres away from the electorate of Batman? But it doesn't matter. It's all about that. This week there's been a big discussion about the kind of language being used by Bill Shorten, that he's strengthened his language against Adani, and he's been really slammed about that. And for the first time, Fran, I'm right here, aren't I, that we're getting for the first time, I think in a couple of years, some Labor MPs off the record at this stage, I haven't seen anyone declare it on, but say they're concerned about the kind of positioning of Bill Shorten on Adani.
Yeah, I mean, what we're seeing, I don't know if it's the first time, but we haven't had much of this leaking out of the shadow cabinet against Bill Shorten. Labor has been really unusually united for the last few years. So I think that's significant here, that we are getting three or four voices, anonymous sources coming out of shadow cabinet saying, oh, look, Bill went further than the conversation. We're not happy about it. We think he's leaned in too far. That's politically instructive, I think, whether or not we're talking about the whole issue about Bill Shorten, whether he's flip-flopping on Adani or not, and what that might mean for what's going on in Batman.
Look, I don't think you can separate this from Batman. I don't believe that the timing is just coincidental. He really made a decision to toughen up the language on Adani because he knows that the issue is biting and that he wants to win that seat. I think that's pretty clear. And clearly the concern that we're hearing from some of his other colleagues is concerned about how this plays out in Queensland.
We will know soon enough. Hey, yeah. Sarah, thanks for coming to our little party.
I've had a great time.
See ya.
Thanks,
see ya,
guys.
Sarah. Okay, it's time for Trading Preferences. PK, what did you love this week?
Well, I don't know, Fran. Do you believe in life after love?
Oh, is that a deep question or is it? Hang on, it's sounding familiar.
It's from the Mardi Gras, Fran. It's Cher. Oh. It's her key song, Believe. It's a gay anthem. It's such a good song. It is such a good song. High rotation at my house. I can tell you, right, that what happened here is that Malcolm Turnbull goes to the Mardi Gras, you know, and he's happy. He's very happy at the Mardi Gras. He's hanging out with Cher. He takes a selfie. He shares it on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter, you name it. He has shared this picture. Get it? Shared with Cher. Anyway, he
shared
shares the
Cher,
picture.
Got it.
And, oh, lordy lord. Cher, of course, the amazing gay icon with that amazing song and many others, starts getting, trolled is probably too strong a word, but, you know, like kind of really challenged by a lot of gay people on the fact that she's taken this selfie. And I'll just read some of them to you. I love you, Cher, but did Malcolm Turnbull tell you he has a whole review being held to enshrine discrimination against LGBTIQ community? Wrote another. Anyway, they kept going. And then she was like starting to respond. I don't know what you mean. The man I talked to seemed proud of everyone at the parade. Am I missing something? The man I talked to could be reasoned with. The man I talked to believes in equal rights for all of these people. The man I talked to will listen and hear. Compassionate. She's just like...
She met the Q&A, Malcolm Turnbull.
Yeah, she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Eventually, clearly she's harassed so much, she says, I am so sorry. Guess that's why I have few friends who are politicians. He seemed very open and excited about the Mardi Gras and the LGBT community. So she basically apologises that this is out there. I have so many feelings about this. One of my feelings,
share
Fran.
Them. I know you're going to share them.
Well, one of my feelings is like that it's just a funny story, which is why I'm sharing it. But the other is, it's just a selfie. It's the Prime Minister. Yes, some people oppose the postal survey and think it caused a lot of pain. I absolutely acknowledge that. There is now marriage equality. This was the 40th anniversary. The Prime Minister of the country was there to support gay and lesbian Australians, which I think is a pretty historic thing. The opposition leader, the Prime Minister, the leader of the Greens, all these political leaders supporting a community that 40 years ago was assaulted. You know, this is
that's
a historic
true.
Moment. That's how
We've
I see it.
We've come a long way, baby. That's true. And there were times not that long ago when political leaders would absolutely go nowhere near the Mardi Gras. In fact, one Liberal leader at one point endorsed it in the program and got a shellacking from within his own party. So you're right, we've come a long way. But I was at the Mardi Gras and there was, if Malcolm Turnbull was there in the crowd with Cher or without Cher, you know, thinking he was going to get cheers because he was the Prime Minister to introduce marriage equality, that was not the feeling, certainly where I was anyway, around me. There was not the feeling towards him. People aren't giving him at the moment credit for that. They're still angry at him for making them go through the postal survey. That seemed to be the vibe where I was.
All right, Fran, what's your trading preference?
Well, Jackie Lambie, she's just the gift that keeps on giving. She was out and about launching her book, Rebel with a Cause, and she was on FM radio in Brisbane and she was talking generally about, you know, 50 Shades of Parley, how she's single and she looks like Parliament's a pretty hot place lately. I think she's talking in the light of Malcolm Turnbull's bonk ban, etc. So she's making light of all that. And then she revealed that she went on a date once with Nick Xenophon. She says he was a real cheapskate. He took me to Kentucky Fried Chicken, so that was it. If he'd chosen a better restaurant, she says, I can't believe this is a quote. I may have changed my mind. He may have got to first base. Who knows? Now, it was like a nanosecond, I think, before Nick Xenophon was out there saying, it wasn't a date. It wasn't a date. She's a great mate of mine. It wasn't a date. And then he pointed out he did buy her 12 chicken nuggets. Anyway, you got to laugh.
All right, that's it. We've reached the very end of this episode. Don't forget to tweet us using the hashtag ThePartyRoom.
You can also email us anytime. Send us your thoughts, thepartyroom@abc.net.au.
And do us a favour. I'm going to really make a big deal about this. Tell your friends about us. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It helps other people find us. Have you stopped doing that? You need to start doing that again, people. You need to start sharing. This isn't just your own secret. Share.
And if you like this podcast and if you're into politics, analysis and interviews, you can get more of that every day, morning, noon and night. Well, morning and night anyway, from PK and I. I'm there on RN Breakfast in the mornings and PK's there on RN Drive every weekday evening.
Fran, what are you seeing for us?
Well, it's all about trade, but I was really struck by the pain that Malcolm Turnbull was suddenly placed in this week when Donald Trump announced those tariffs on steel, which will hit Australia, compared to the pleasure on his face, that big smile on his face in Washington just 2 weeks ago when they were mates, they were the best of mates. So that brought to mind, of course, Chrissy Amphlett and the Divinyls, and this track, thanks to the genius again of Russell Stapleton, Pleasure and Pain.
Oh, I love it. I can't wait. See you, Fran.
See you, PK.
President of the United States and the Prime Minister of Australia.
Donald, Donald, why do you push? Why do you push? Why do you push? Donald, did you forget about me? I've been standing at the back of your life, back row centre, just above the ice. Please don't ask me, now we are getting on. No, please don't ask me, now we are getting on. Break your word with the tariff on steel. Thought we were mates, can't you see how I feel? Donald, Donald, why you wanna mess it up? Sooner or later I'll find my place, stand my ground, save my face. Please don't ask me, now we've been getting on. No, please don't ask me, now we've been getting on. It's a fine line between pleasure and pain. You've done it once and you can do it again. Whatever you've done, don't try to explain. It's a fine, fine line between pleasure and pain.
Today I'm honoured to welcome my friend, Prime Minister Turnbull.
Mr. President, thank you so much for your very warm welcome, your generous hospitality.
Today, strengthened by our common values and history, we're working together to promote our mutual interests.
We're obviously working to intensify our cooperation on trade.
We're going to be instituting tariffs.
Today, we've agreed on some new initiatives that will deepen this relationship further.
Because without steel and aluminum, you almost don't have much of a country.
You are our most important strategic and economic partner.
It'll be 25% for steel. It'll be 10% for aluminum.
And to lay the groundwork for the next 100 years of mateship.
It's a great honor.
History teaches us there are no winners in a trade war. A trade war is a race to the bottom that makes us all poorer, leaves our citizens with less choice and fewer opportunities.